Now in the middle of one of the most significant eras in automotive, Carl Anthony amplifies the minds and voices behind this historic transformation as the host of AutoVision News Radio.
Mic check, one, two.
All while coming to terms with middle age, father loss, and what it means to be successful in Detroit.
In the winter of 2004, I was into my second semester of broadcasting school at Iowa Western Community College in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Around that time, a new program director, Sophia John, was hired to oversee our college radio station, KIWR, or 89.7 The River, the cutting edge of rock. A short time after Sophia arrived, she held a meeting with all the students involved with 89.7 The River as part of the Electronic Media Studies program. By the time that meeting ended on that winter afternoon in Stewart Hall, only a few students remained in her corner. You see, the broadcasting students, or radio kids, as was the slang term around campus, had a reputation for being poor students. They had a reputation for thinking they were a bit too cool for school because they were on the college radio station. Sophia came in and busted all of us down a notch, having cut her teeth in corporate commercial radio and discovering and managing one of the biggest metal bands in the world. A group of nine from Des Moines, Iowa, who still wear their signature mask when performing. In that meeting, Sophia said being on the radio was a unique privilege, not a guaranteed right, and that to crack the microphone on 89.7 The River meant that everyone needed to up their game, both academically and in terms of media performance. 89.7 The River's massive 100,000-watt tower meant that us as college students could compete with the likes of the corporate radio giants in the Omaha Metro. Few college stations are afforded that large of a tower with that far of a reach, and if we wanted our voice on those airwaves, we had to earn it. That meant stronger critiques of our on-air work, more focus on broadcasting formatics, and zero emphasis on us being cool. Most of my classmates hated Sophia from that day forward. Many called her the B word, some the C word. In my life, there has never been a greater mentor. The day after that meeting, I went into her office and begged her to work with me outside of class so that I could get better on the air. I told Sophia that if I didn't succeed at Iowa Western and at 89.7 The River, I didn't have anywhere else to go. That the circumstances in my life at the time were such that college was a make it or break it thing for me. I told Sophia that when she spoke, she had lit a fire under my ass, and that I would be okay with her holding me to the flame for the next couple of years so that I could complete the broadcasting program and graduate. She did, and I will be forever grateful. Fast forward 2 decades to the evening of March 7th, 2024. The Automotive Culture 2.0 book launch by the founder of Gravitas Detroit and the architect of cultural change, Jan Griffiths. As Jan was speaking at the event, I saw my longtime mentor, Sophia John. As Jan talked about challenging the status quo in automotive and changing the conventional notion of leadership, I felt that same fire being lit, that same fire that knocked me out of complacency 20 years ago. Armed with the skills she learned in the Welsh farmlands and a degree from the University of Wales, Jan moved to the United States at 23. She rose through the corporate ranks of the auto industry, ultimately serving as chief procurement officer for a $3 billion Tier 1 global automotive supplier, and later earned a spot on Automotive News's list of the 100 leading women in the North American automotive industry.
Moving at the speed of mobility, this is AutoVision News Radio with Carl Anthony in Detroit, Michigan.
Jan, let me begin by saying that, and I'm not blowing smoke at you when I say this, that when it comes to being an automotive podcaster and broadcaster, or just whatever it means to be in the automotive industry, to be successful in Detroit, to be successful in automotive, you have to know that I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for you.
Wow. Thank you. That's quite an opening.
I'm not really sure what I want to be when I grow up, but when I look at Gravitas Detroit, I listen to the Automotive Leaders podcast, I come to things like your book launch, I think,
Jan is somebody, that's who I want to be.
But why, Carl? Why? What is it that you see in me that, what draws you to that?
I think because you had the dream job, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use your word trappings. You had all the trappings that go with that.
Yep.
And then you followed your heart and you walked away.
Mm-hmm.
To do something that was close to you, something that meant a lot to you. And you did it. And if I'm understanding right from the night that you got up and spoke at your book launch, you did it because it was the right thing to do. You felt called, that the conviction was very strong. And you do it with such grace, Jan.
Thank you. Thank you.
So at the beginning of the Automotive Leaders podcast, you introduce yourself as that passionate and rebellious farmer's daughter from Wales. I want to go back to Wales. I want to go back to the farm. Where does the passion come from? Where does the rebellion come from?
The Welsh people are a rebellious sort of people. In sure. fact, if you watch Braveheart, Mel okay. Gibson will say, "Let's bring in the Welsh."
Yeah.
Because that's who we are. We're rebellious. We're rebellious nature. We have a dragon on our flag. What's that tell you? Right?
Right.
We have a lot of fire, a lot of passion. It's just it's who we are. But I use that tagline, if you will, at the beginning of the podcast, because that's it. That's who I am, really. I am that passionate, rebellious farmer's daughter from Wales. And there's a lot in that statement. I'm passionate about everything that I do. I love to challenge the status quo. And I love, if there's a rule, I want to break it or challenge it or find out why it's there or something. So that rebellious nature is in me. The farmer's daughter from Wales, I am a farmer's daughter from Wales. And I think a lot of that brought in my work ethic, in my ability to function in a male-dominated environment, because I grew up with farmers and farmers' sons around me.
Sure, sure.
And that taught me a lot. It taught me my negotiation skills. You've probably heard me say before, I learned my negotiation skills in the pub with my dad, and I did.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
go to some fancy negotiation school. That's where I learned it. Price of tractor parts, and hey, you see these guys haggle in the pub? You learn yeah. a lot. And I sat there, and I was M's daughter. I didn't even have a name because women, you know, weren't that well respected in the farming community back then. So I was just M's daughter. You know, oh yeah, M's daughter, whatever.
And I remember you had said, I believe you've said it in your podcast, also in your book, the pub was really divided into two sections. There was the yeah. male section, and then, you know, that's where all the guys were drinking. And then, you know, the where the women were was basically the family section. I do remember you saying that at one
yes.
time. It was very clearly divided in half.
Yes. Yeah. And it was the norm. I mean, it wasn't considered a bad thing. It's just the way it was. I mean, the culture had grown up over decades, and it had a stone floor in the bar, and yeah. the lounge area had carpet, and the working men went into the bar. Women didn't go in there. I went in there, and,
yeah.
I was daddy's little girl, and I would sit there and I would listen to what he had to say and what the other guys had to say. I wasn't really encouraged to contribute too much, but that's okay. You can sit back and you can learn a lot from these people.
How old are you, Jan, when all of this is happening? About what age are you?
I would say from the age of about 13, 14 onwards.
Okay. Okay. Do you ever think that would... you ever think that would be useful someday in the automotive industry? Did you ever have any idea of where that would go, that would be a skill set that you would fall back on someday? Did you ever envision that?
Never in a million years.
Yeah.
I'd never heard the term automotive. I didn't know what automotive meant. I grew up in a farming community. I didn't know what a manufacturing plant was, what an office environment was. I had none of that, none of that sort of discussion around me. It was completely alien to me.
How in the world, Jan, do you go from the farm to the automotive industry? How does that happen? How do you make that jump? What's the catalyst that sort of spurs that in motion?
Just like many young people leaving college, you have a degree, you have a qualification, you have no experience. So I signed up with a temp agency
okay.
in Wales, and they said, we got this job at a company called BorgWarner. And I thought, BorgWarner, huh, I've seen them. I drive, I see the plant when I drive to college.
Sure.
Because they had a plant in a place called Kenfig. And I would see it as I was driving to college. And I thought, huh, I think they make batteries. I don't know. They made transmissions at the time. They made manual transmissions for Saab and for Jaguar. And I thought, transmission? What's that? So anyway, my mother calls me in from the field. I was riding my horse on the field and before cell phones, obviously.
Sure.
And she calls me in and I took the call and they said, we have a job for you. You're going to be a temp in a manufacturing plant for this company called BorgWarner. And I walked onto that shop floor and I inhaled that air and the coolant and I fell in love with manufacturing at that very moment. And the rest, they say, is history.
And it was really that quick, Jan, just the smell and the environment. It was that quick.
It was that and the ability to earn money.
Yeah.
I saw the ability to earn money. At that point, it wasn't a lot of money. I don't remember how much it was, but it was probably just a few dollars an hour back then. Yeah. And I was doing a lot of the grunt jobs and making coffee and copying blueprints. Sending telexes. I always love to tell people that because the young people are like, what? What's that? Google it.
I'm going to have to Google that. I'll know what a fax machine is. I know that telex. I have no idea, Jan.
Pre-fax and pre-email.
But this temp stuff builds though. I mean, it builds, and I've heard you talk about this. You talk about this in your book, Automotive Culture 2.0, that at a certain point, you couldn't get enough of it. So you started asking questions. You wanted to know more.
Yeah. I don't have an engineering background. I have a business degree, and I'm not particularly good at math. For me, this whole idea of engineering was fascinating. That there was this blueprint. But then there were two blueprints. There was a casting print and then there was a machining print. Well, why was that? And why were the numbers the same, but not really, but different? And why did one have more dimensions than the other? And then how do these parts come together? Oh, in a thing called a bill of materials. Oh, okay. What's that? And then the parts come in the plant and there's logistics and there's purchasing and there's supply chain. And I was all over it. I could not stop asking questions. And then I got into purchasing. They made me a buyer at a very, very young age. And they made me materials manager at 23, I think.
Okay.
And to be a materials manager in a manufacturing plant at 23 and not really know what the hell you were doing was pretty terrifying. But throughout my entire career, Carl, I have not been qualified for any job I've ever taken, ever. I just have a belief in myself that I will figure it out. And I have.
When you made the switch to Gravitas Detroit, and I do want to talk about that in a second, but when you made that switch, were you asking sort of those similar questions? Why this? Why that? Did that come back into play when you were starting Gravitas Detroit?
Yeah, it's never left. I'm curious. And then I found out over the years that I became more curious about human behavior. Yeah. And how that behavior impacts bottom line results. And I saw that the way we were treating suppliers, when you're taught and trained to beat suppliers over the head with a baseball bat to get the result, is something never felt right about that. And I didn't think that it got the desired result. I thought there was a better way. I think that there's a better way to handle staff meetings, to handle leadership team meetings.
Sure.
There's a better way to get things done. I think we waste a lot of time and energy in this industry by following an outdated model of command and control. So the more those questions started to come and the answers came back, and I was thinking, you know, we're not going to make this transformation as an industry if we don't really change the culture, the how we do things.
That transformation. So on your website, gravitasdetroit.com, I'll leave a link in the show notes, but you have written there on the homepage, technology is evolving at an alarming rate, yet company culture remains stuck in the past with outdated beliefs, as you've just said, Jan. So two-part question here. First, what is Gravitas Detroit? Take us through that. And then second, help me, Jan, understand from your perspective the contrast between technology and company culture, because it's clear that they're not progressing at the same rate. And why is that something that we should care about?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Gravitas Detroit, I founded in 2018. I walked away from my corporate role. I believe that there's a better way to do business in the auto industry. And we do that at Gravitas Detroit by providing workshops, offsite leadership team meetings for companies to help people understand what their culture is and what they need to do to amplify their values. And then secondly, I produce podcasts, internal podcasts for companies to help them really amplify those values internally. Because, you know, Carl, we can't reach the shop floor in this industry. You can't reach them. They don't have a corporate email. So I love taking this medium that you and I both love called podcasting and using that internally to help companies really amplify their values. And that's what we do. And I'm in there every single day working with tier ones, helping them figure out what their culture is and what they need to do to make it better.
The technology portion, why is it something that we need to pay attention to?
If you look how fast technology is accelerating, we talk about it all the time. But what about the model of leadership and the culture to go along with that? Does anybody seriously believe that the model that got us to where we're at today, which is command and control, is going to take us into the future? And in the book, you'll hear the statement about, would you run a 4K video on a 95 Windows operating system?
Yeah, it's a great analogy, by the way.
Right. You wouldn't, would you?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
So what makes you think that you're going to transform an industry to EVs, autonomous driving, smart cities, all the things that we need to do? We know that when there's a vehicle in the EV space, you know, we'll pick on Tesla, right, as an example. If there's an update to that vehicle, it's a OTA update. It just happened. Vehicle design, vehicle manufacturing, all of those lead times are shortening. Mm-hmm. Changes need to be rapidly implemented. Software-defined vehicles, all these things that I know you are really heavy into.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do that when you've got a culture that is divided into silos, that's playing games.
Right.
That the badge of honor is how, as a leader, how far down in the weeds you are and how harsh you are and how aggressive you are with your people or your suppliers. These are cultural issues that are slowing us down, Carl. And until we get our arms around that, we're never going to transform this industry at the speed that it needs to be transformed at.
Yeah. I've heard you many times, Jan, cite the work of Stephen Covey, you know, the command and control versus trust and inspire. But Jan, where does command and control come from? Where does that ideology originate? Why does it take hold in automotive for so many years? And maybe further to that, why is it still so prevalent in automotive? Where does that come from, the command and control in automotive?
It comes from military originally.
Sure.
But it really started at the beginning at the Industrial Revolution, because as we moved from cottage industries more to the factory concept, it was all about scaling and efficiency. It was all about standardized work. So it's all about putting people and jobs in boxes and controlling the output, controlling the inputs and controlling the outputs.
Sure.
And at that point in time, it worked great. Nobody wanted anything different, but the world has evolved, and COVID was the catalyst that caused us to look at the way we work and put a microscope on it. It was happening anyway, Carl, but COVID said, woof, wait a minute. Why do we have to go into the office 5 days a week and work 9 to 5? Oh, wow. Never asked that question before. Let's think about that.
Right.
And then you've got startup culture in California. You've got technology companies. You know, they have their own culture. There's no right or wrong culture. There's no California startup culture is right and we're all wrong in legacy auto.
Sure.
There isn't. There are good elements to both. There is only the culture that you want in your business, for your organization, your values, your brand to meet your industry and your customers. And we got to get our arms around that and understand that it's our responsibility as leaders to drive that culture.
If I'm a company out there and I say, I get this trust and inspire model, but I'm looking around at command and control everywhere I turn. I know that's not the way for the future. I know that trust and inspire is going to be better, but I don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
That's where Gravitas Detroit comes in. Am I understanding that right? Okay.
Exactly. So you have a few choices, right? You can hire some big, fancy, high-priced consulting firm And that's great. And I'm sure they're awesome, but it's going to cost you millions of dollars.
Right.
Right. Where Gravitas Detroit fits in is that nice niche area where we can come in and exactly as I have my title on my emails and all over the place, I am the architect of cultural change. So I'm going to come in with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring all of my experience, everything that I've learned from leaders I've interviewed on my podcast, and I'm going to help you craft that plan. Now, I may play a role in that plan. I may run a few leadership workshops for you. I may do some speaking events for you, but I'm the architect
right.
of that cultural transformation plan for you. Does that help?
It does. It does. Again, gravitasdetroit.com. Jan, I'm going to leave a link in the show notes. I want to set up two different pictures here. So the night of your book launch, Automotive Culture 2.0, also a link in the show notes. When you got up to speak, you talked about the dreaded Monday morning meetings that were sucking the life out of you. And you're like, I got to do something different. I know it's my dream job and it's everything I've ever wanted, but I got to do something different. So there's one visual. Now, this second visual, as you said a moment ago, you're the architect of cultural change. Take us through that progression.
Okay. So C-suite, conference room, executive leadership, staff meeting every Monday. Same type of PowerPoint, same agenda, very little engagement and interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself drifting to your personal email more than paying attention in the meeting. I will openly admit, and I know there's people out there that can totally relate to what I'm talking about right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
So then you have to wonder why. Why am I disengaged here? What's going on? Okay, so I make the decision to leave. And I start Gravitas Detroit. And I have no experience being an entrepreneur. Really, I have no idea what I'm doing, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't. So I'm starting to learn, you know, how to be an entrepreneur, starting to put some structure around what this business is.
Sure.
The mission is true and it's in my heart and it is to impact the way we work and the culture in this industry. But how to do that, how to define a business around that, how to market that, I've had to learn that.
Yeah.
And then somebody said, start a podcast. And I thought, oh, that's great. What's a podcast? So I had to learn all about that. Many YouTube videos, of YouTube videos later. And I launched the podcast and then a pandemic hits. So you come off of the C-suite job with a great comp package, single mom, house in Birmingham. And then all of a sudden, like you're on your butt because it's COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was on unemployment. It was brutal.
Yeah.
I had two job offers that came along during that time and I said no to both of them.
What was that like saying no to both of those?
I wondered if I had seriously lost my mind at that point.
Yeah.
Because the ego was screaming, oh, this is, and it was a great job. This is a great job. It has it's a big title, it's a lot of responsibility and a lot of comp to it. But something inside me, Carl, was saying, no, don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, no. And when I think the universe tests you, it's like, okay, lady. So you think you're architect of culture change and all that. All right. Let's see how committed you are.
Yeah.
Say no to this.
Right. 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 Yeah. Prove it. Mm-hmm.
And I did. And then another one came along and still, you know, the business wasn't generating hardly any revenue. It was rough. But then little by little, you know, the entrepreneurial journey, you start to get a little bit more clarity on the business and then it starts to grow and you get some traction. Podcast starts to take off. We got our first podcast sponsor. Then the book comes. Somebody comes up with this idea of a book. And I thought, well, okay, that's not a bad idea because I really need that to get the higher level speaking gigs.
Sure.
But now it's grown into it's got a whole life of its own. Now the book is just, people are taking pictures of themselves with it, putting it on social media.
Yeah.
And they're really using it as a tool to open up the conversation of culture with their team, which I absolutely love, Carl. So it's having more impact than I originally anticipated, which makes me happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's so much that I have learned from podcast interviews, from interviewing great leaders on the podcast. I wanted a way to really boil that down to just the key points
mm-hmm.
that leaders in the auto industry could take on board and open up that conversation with their team. And there's an ego thing that comes into play here. And that is that if you write a book, you think that if it's not like 250, 300 pages, it's not going to be taken seriously. And you got to get over that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know a lot of books, most people only get like a third of the way through?
I didn't know that. No.
A statistic out there. I need to find it. I found it when I was researching for the book. So a lot of people, you know, they start a book and they're like, because books typically are written by writers who like to use words and write a lot.
Yeah. Guilty.
This book was written by me, a recovering supply chain person who doesn't like to read words for the sake of reading. It's just tell me what I need to know and then tell me what I'm going to do with it. Yes. And oh, by the way, give me a place to go if I want to go deeper. So once we came out with the structure for the book, I used a ghostwriter to help me really dial down out of those podcast episodes.
Yeah.
What was important to the message. I came up with a call to action. So things you can talk about with your team. And then we put a barcode in there. So if you want to go deeper and listen to the full episode, you can. Honestly, Carl, I'm shocked. People are loving it. They're saying, thank you for writing such a short book.
Yeah. And like the podcast, I have enjoyed seeing many people on LinkedIn from our industry posting with that book and giving you the accolades that you deserve. And
thank you.
Audrey Mast as well, your ghostwriter. You've gone to great lengths to acknowledge her. Tell me a little bit about Audrey.
Yeah, well, you know, when you write a book, again, like podcasting, I didn't know anything about it, about being an author. And there's this concept of a ghostwriter. And I'd heard of it, but I didn't really know what it was. So a lot of authors and a lot of people who write books use ghostwriters, but they don't talk about it.
Right.
And that to me seems a little bit disingenuous. My whole thing about leadership is giving credit to people. Audrey was a critical part of it. She works for a company called Podreacher. And they worked on the show notes for my podcast.
Right.
So
right.
She already knew my voice. So she knew a lot about me. She knew the mission. And she had a line back into automotive because of her grandmother.
Okay.
As we were writing the book together, I said, Audrey, I'm totally going to acknowledge you. And she said, oh, you know, you don't have to do that. Because people don't with ghostwriters. Yeah. I'm like, no, you're going to be acknowledged in this. So that's why you see, you know, I had her. She has her own section in the acknowledgements. So that's Audrey.
At the beginning of the book, the dedication to Gwen, your daughter, on the inside cover. Tell us about Gwen and what her support means to you.
You saw it. You saw me actually dedicate that book to her in person during the book launch.
I did. It was pretty cool.
And I believe that we have to look at our legacy here in the auto industry and how important it is that we leave it better than the day that we walked into it. And I want to dedicate it to her because it's just her and I. You know, I've been a single mom for many, many years.
Sure.
And I should mention, she does have a great dad in her life. I don't want to discount him.
Of course.
We're no longer married, but he's a phenomenal dad. But it's just the two of us, really. And she holds that mirror up to my face. So when I'm saying something or doing something that is not right, she'll call me out on it. And I, in a nice way. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that she will challenge and question, just having that support. And she had grown up with a very comfortable lifestyle with my corporate job. And when I made the decision to leave the corporate world, I talked to her about it. And I said, look, no more expensive European vacations, trips to the designer malls, all those kinds of things, right? And then she turned around and she was, 16, I think, at the time, 15 at the time. She said, Mom, if we got to eat ramen noodles, that's what we're going to do. And that's why I put that in the dedication, because there it is. There's the support right there.
I love that. When she said that, how did that make you feel?
It was validation that I was doing the right thing, because she could see that I would be much happier doing what I loved, even though we knew that the money was going to take a long time to come back to anywhere close to a corporate salary. And she was right there with me. And I needed to know that she was right there with me. And everybody I talk to that's really close to me about leaving my job and doing this, they all said, you should do this. You were born to do this.
And what's interesting, Jan, is that I only know you in the context of Gravitas Detroit and Automotive Leaders podcast. So I only know this part of you, but I would still say that that I cannot picture you doing any other thing other than being an architect of cultural change.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I think you're right. But most of the people in the industry have known me a while, will know me as supply chain, right? They know me as automotive supply chain or program management. I worked in for many years and a little bit of manufacturing for a while. So I've worked in a lot of different functions, but people know me more as supply chain purchasing in the tier one space. And it's taken, Carl, it's taken all of 5 years to rebrand myself, quite frankly.
Sure, sure. The 21 traits of authentic leadership available on gravitasdetroit.com, link in the show notes, of course. So I want to turn this around on you because this is something you ask all of your guests. So allow me to flip the tables. Of the 21 traits, Jan, which one speaks to you the most and why?
A leader today has to have vision. It's more important in automotive than ever before. And if you think right. about that, a lot of the OEMs, the senior purchasing people at the OEMs, in my mind, they come down into the weeds way too much.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be looking onward and upward. And the whole idea of leadership is to get the team all working together and really helping people thrive. So as a leader, the very first thing you have to do is have a clear vision. You've got to know who you are as a leader and where you're going, because you've got a whole team of people that you want to take there. And if you're not clear on what that vision is, and please don't tell me it's to be the world-class manufacturer of a widget. That is not a vision. That is a bullshit corporate statement that right. somebody put on your website. A real vision that people can really get behind, the best kind of vision is one that you co-create with your team. You're all behind it. You all know how you contribute to it. And as a leader, you are in there with that rallying cry every single day. So to me, Carl, vision is everything.
Yeah. Jan, everything we've talked about. And but by the way, thank you for doing this. And again, I mean it when I say that I have tremendous admiration and respect for you and for the work that you do. The legacy. What is the legacy that you would like to leave at the end of your life?
I want to know that I have made a difference in this industry, Carl. I want to know that I have made an impact, that people are happier working in the auto industry, people want to come to work in the auto industry, that people see it as a place to thrive, as a place to be, as a place they want to come and work in. I want to know that I've had that impact, Carl. That's my legacy.
For more information on Gravitas Detroit, the Automotive Leaders Podcast, and the book, Automotive Culture 2.0, see the links in the show notes. AutoVision News Radio is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and more. In Detroit, alongside Jan Griffiths, I'm Carl Anthony, AutoVision News Radio.